It's a hypothetical question that was not a hypothetical question, but a real question posed by my brain to myself only after what I had done.
Uh-huh.
So, as you know, I was saying I'm a little bit late because I need to grab dinner.
Uh-huh.
Going to Chipotle, classic place for meals. Next to the Chipotle. Nope. Don't put your head down. Don't sigh yet. Next to the Chipotle, brand new grand opening of a poke bowl store.
What?
Poke bowls.
Is that like they serve you Pokemon? Like what's going on?
So I'm not the only one who thinks like that. Thank you. But no, because I had to catch myself each time I go, no, it's a poke bowl, not a Pokeball. poke is like the sushi raw meat stuff, but a poke bowl is like either salad or like rice. And then they put the raw meats and like the various toppings, like a sushi toppings inside of it. Sort of like one of those trendy hip salads.
Oh, so it's like raw fish put on lettuce.
It's like deconstructed sushi. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like if you took the sushi roll and unwrapped it and just put a bunch of it in a bowl.
Yes. And so it's healthy. It's fresh. It's, you know, it's everything hip and trendy today. Grand opening just opened. I was like, why not? I'll try it. So I go in there and it's like one of those make your choose your ingredients, choose your own adventure kind of Bandersnatch Pokeball things. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Is it? We'll see. But so I'm choosing it and I was like, oh, they have a sushi burrito, which I always am down to try a good burrito. I was going to go to Chipotle. Why not just convert it over to sushi? I asked for a sushi burrito, put in, and I was like, what meat should I put? I just asked dealer's choice, throw in some stuff. And she was like, all right, cool. And then as she's making it, she's like, this is the first time I'm doing this. And I was like, all right, cool. Because grand opening. And she was like, yeah. And she's like, but I've never done this before either. And she's not like a sushi chef or somebody. She's just a teenage kid putting together this stuff. Gives me my burrito. Gave me some nacho chips on the side where I was confused later on. Not bad. Scoops up the leftovers pretty fine. Sushi nachos. It works. But I was just like, as I'm eating this, I'm thinking to myself, this place just opened today. They just have new workers. They're still figuring out the kinks and stuff. And I just ordered a sushi burrito, had it made for the first time by a teenage kid who's never handled raw fish and all that stuff before, and was trying to wing it on the fly, realized like, oh, she packed it too big, she squished it down, she tried to figure it out, and then she put some leftovers on the side and gave me the nacho chip things on the side, tortilla chips. And I'm thinking to myself, my brain just goes, RBZ, should you have ordered on the first day raw seafood from a place that, I presume it's been, but it, if it's been open for only one day, health inspectors and stuff don't come on day one.
I mean, I assume they come before it opens to make
sure. I assume
the
place is clean, yes. But like, as I'm watching her make this stuff and everything, it's like, my brain was just like, stomach, Harvey Z, stomach Z, we might have made. Maybe we were hasty in doing this. There are two types of people in the world.
Raw fish isn't that bad for you.
It's true, but raw fish, when it's bad, can be real bad for you.
All right, then. Well, so that's welcome to a very special episode where halfway through we might stop because Stomach Z gives Harvey Z some problems.
Well, so I feel like there's two types of people in the world. Which one are you? Grand opening of a new raw fish type restaurant. Do you go in day one?
I'm allergic to soy.
What?
I wouldn't go in.
You're allergic to soy?
Yeah, I found that out a little while ago.
Because I think I've watched you eat some soy.
Oh, yeah. I that's how I figured it out.
You poor boy. I'm just like, soy, like, soy, yeah, soy
isn't
sauce.
A lot of shit.
Soy is, that's like allergic to like one of those gluten, like this is a legit allergy. This isn't like.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a legit allergy as in it'll kill me. It's a legit allergy in that like.
It'll annoy you.
Yeah. It'll annoy me and like make lactose. Sure I have to always like. Check out to make sure a place has a bathroom.
Are you a soy-heavy person?
You'd be surprised at how much soy and is like in things. Like, I went to Potbelly. I got a meatball sub.
Your classic faves, yeah.
Soy was in the bread. Soy was in the meatballs.
Whoa.
There was enough soy in that that it gave me problems. Soy is in fucking Oreos?
That's like the most healthy, safe thing to eat. It's like vegan.
Lettuce, Oreos. Same thing to Harvey Z.
Yes. Stomach Z does not know the difference. They're both vegan. They must be healthy. It's a gamer. Da-da. We're here. It's a gamer. Da-da. That's it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer. I'm your host, T-Man, and I'm here with...
Harvey Z, in the place to be.
Joined also by Stomach Z, who might be getting in on the microphone action, depending on
I apologize in advance for Stomach Z.
If you hear some weird rumbling, it's not thunder, it's just Harvey Z. And
Stomach Z.
Stomach Z.
Stomach yeah. Z. He's a cameo.
Yeah. Stomach Z, Intestine Z.
They're all Zs. Yeah. We're just a big collective.
Big Z.
The entity known as Harvey Z is
the
made up
Zentity?
Of...
Entity? Entity? We got to workshop this. We got to workshop all that. We'll figure it out. Nope. So today's episode... as we said last week, we're sticking to the schedule. Oh. This week, we're going to be doing Kingdom Hearts. There's been some news, but we're not going to worry about that. We'll have a news week next week and catch up on different things. But before we get to Kingdom Hearts, because I feel like the Kingdom Hearts thing is going to take a long period of time.
Okay.
And maybe if it doesn't take as long as I expected, we'll get to some news at the end. But first, I want to talk about Velvet Buzzsaw.
Are we going to go spoilerish or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, we're definitely going to go spoilerish.
Really?
Yeah, okay. We'll just...
It just came out like this week.
I mean, it came out February 1st, so by the time this airs, it'll be out for about a week and a half.
And for those not in the know, Velvet Buzzsaw is a Netflix original movie.
Yeah, it came out on Netflix.
Had Sundance Awards, did not know that.
Jake Gyllenhaal, Renee Russo, Tony Collette, John Malkovich.
Yeah. All and them David Diggs.
Who's that?
He played the artist.
I think I know who.
I want to say he was from Hamilton.
I have little to no interest in
Hamilton. I just know his name, and I was like, I've seen him in other things. It's either that. I don't think it's from. It's not from the Jordan. Jordan Peele. It's not from that one. What's the movie I'm thinking of?
Key and Peele?
No. Not from
Get Out?
Yeah, it's not from Get Out. I want to say he's not from Get Out. He's definitely from. I want to say Hamilton, but...
Okay, I believe you.
I'm just going off my brain.
I know
nothing
about Hamilton.
You have the internet in front of you. You can tell us, but yeah.
I'm not going to...
Okay.
Anyway, it just came out February 1st. And so the main sticking point that we're going to have a slight argument over, I think, here, is because...
The trailer
came out a couple in mid-January-ish, and the trailer blew me away. Like, I was like, after I saw this, I'm like, I have to see this movie.
And you recommended the movie
and
to
I
me.
And I recommended it to you... But you're a non-trailer person. I was like, you know what? Don't go into the movie. And then so you watched the trailer after you'd seen the movie.
Yes, because I was like, I watched this. So I'm watching the movie and I realized you told me nothing about it other than you liked the trailer for it.
This was basically the Stanley Parable of movies.
Yes.
Like, knew nothing about it.
So I didn't even know what genre it was, which was, it was a rather novel feeling to be like, so what kind of movie is this going to be? It opens up and I'm like, is it a comedy? Is it a, because I also don't know the actors that well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Jake Gyllenhaal, I don't know. He's in some weird stuff. He's in the Spider-Man movie. I don't really, as we've discussed before, know his work. And so opening sequence through the art scene, it's very like body language and stuff. And I'm like, it's artsy. I get where you're going. Is this going to be a satire movie? Is this a parody movie? And so I'm just watching it and I'm like, okay. And that's where, then it, there's the meta level of my brain, which is, why did T-Man recommend this movie to me? And why is T-Man so impressed with this movie? And so as I'm watching, those are the two levels that I'm going through is, one, what the hell is going on in this movie? And what's this movie going to be? Because I have no expectations. And it is a pretty weird artsy movie, which is kind of fun. I enjoyed that part. But it's even weirder and artsier when you have no idea what's going to happen. Or what to expect. And then I was like, oh, there's some dramatic music. And then there's some scary music and stuff. And I'm like, and eventually I'd find out like halfway through, oh, this is a horror movie. Really? You recommended a horror movie for me? And I was like, is this a T-Man movie? Quickly ruled that out. It's not T-Man.
It's definitely not a T-Man movie.
But then, so that's the one level. It's like, it was enjoyable for me to figure out like, what the hell is this movie going to be? Because it was like, okay, the movie, the music is dramatic. Is this scary dramatic? Is this intense dramatic? Is this a rom-com? And it's like, there's bits and pieces where it's like, oh, there's a love interest story. And I'm like, where that was fun. I will say, going in blind to a movie with the only recommendation is you were enthused about it. So I knew it wasn't like a Harvey Z recommendation of you must see it because it's so bad. It's you seemed excited for this, but mm-hmm. you hadn't seen the movie either.
I hadn't seen it yet. I watched it last night.
And then the second level was, and I watched it last night as well, actually, or last evening.
Yeah, yes. Last evening.
And then, so the second level was, why did you like it? And then once I finished it, so my ultimate review for the movie was like, it was okay. It was fine. Like, once I realized what it was, and so we're going to get into spoilers here, so please go see this movie. I do actually, T-Man enthusiastically recommends it. I say it's not a bad movie.
Well, I think it was a really awesome trailer, and I'll, okay. and I'll...
Yep. Yeah. So, like, watch the movie, and then come back. Spoilers are going to start now.
Yeah. Spoilers now.
So, it's a horror movie, I already kind of mentioned that, but, like... I was really confused as to why you recommended a horror movie, one, because you're not a big horror aficionado. And I was like, what's type of horror? And then I was like, as I'm watching it, so what the premise of the movie it seems to be is, I was like, oh, is it a serial killer? This guy, he's a paint. It's all about the art world, art critics and such. And this woman discovers this guy's paintings. And he has thousands of paintings and they're all, the art world is fascinated by them. But then plot twist, the paintings, when you look at them, they kind of come to life and or attack the people who are profiting off of the paintings.
Yeah. Yep. It's basically Final Destination, but with art.
Okay. Because I was wondering if that's where, like, that was my final conclusion of why did you like this? I was like, you were really enthused about it. And so in my mind, I was like, is this going to be like groundbreaking? Because you saw a trailer. Is this groundbreaking dialogue, action, violence? What are we going into here? And I was like, okay, it's artsy. There's some humor in it. It's a world that I don't really know, the art critic world. And it's doing a fun job. Like, I don't know if it's satire or
parody. Yeah, it's a satire. It was billed as satire horror or like okay. comedy horror, black comedy sort of thing. Because
like these are all artsy, like art critic style people and they're ridiculous and rich.
And they're all terrible people. Like, let's be real. Like, there weren't really anyone you were, aside from like the David? Girl who kept finding all the bodies.
Oh, I didn't like her either.
I know, I liked her. And then the graphic designer artist who was like,
he walked away from the money and stuff and thus survived. Although he never knew that the horror was going on really in the background. But like, so I'm watching it and I'm like, so I was expecting like maybe it was going to be like Tarantino-like dialogue. So I was looking for things I liked. Tarantino was a person who blew me away because the dialogue and it was so cool. This wasn't that cool. It was interesting. Then I was like, Kevin Smith is a director I like because his dialogue. Here, I'm like, okay, it's fine. The performances are okay, but it's not the performances that are selling me. It's an interesting concept in the beginning. And then it turned into a horror movie. And then once it was that, I was like, this feels to me like, and I think I posted it to you, Goosebumps a little bit, where I was like, this is like Say Cheese and Die. Like, the paintings are coming to life. And it's not even like, because I was like, maybe there's a serial killer. I like serial killers. I'm trying to latch on to this movie. No, like, random artwork comes to life because of this guy's spirit. Like, there was a painting he didn't paint, of monkeys. This guy was just near a painting of monkeys, and the monkeys attacked him.
Yeah, it was like the art, his spirit. So the guy that drew all these, it was like, some of it was drawn in blood, you know.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Spooky.
Yeah.
And he was like, abused as a child, so he killed his father, and like he was in an insane asylum, and he painted all these paintings.
That part was intriguing. I liked that, the psychodrama and the tension of that, and that's why again I was trying to latch on to the serial killer part. But then in the end, like, paintings just came to life and killed people.
I mean, it was like it was imbued with his essence or something, and so
very
the paintings.
Final Destination-y.
Yeah, it was like anyone who profited off of these like disturbed paintings, because he gave the instructions that they were supposed to be destroyed when he died, and instead people started selling them, and that's when the horror aspects come.
And that's why I was like, so yes, I say it lightly, like Say Cheese and Die. It's not exactly like that, the Goosebumps book, but what it was more was like either the Twilight Zone or like Tales. Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah,
like those types of like
I like. So that's the kind of horror that I like. I like the kind of like cheesy sort of
morality tale a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Final Destination, it does fit into that where, okay, everybody who profits is, because I was like, there's no like, in a slasher movie, there's the big bad and you got to defeat the big bad somehow and kill him. This guy is there's paintings. You got to destroy some of the paint. Like, how do you defeat the big bad? It's an unkillable kind of Final Destination-y. How do you out-cheat death? And spoilers again, everybody who profited died.
You got to admit, the last kill was pretty spectacular, though. Like, I liked that a lot. I was like, because that was a good Chekhov's gun moment.
Yeah, that was like, a Chekhov's gun moment.
Yeah,
I
like that.
The last kill being like,
I don't want to spoil that
one. Okay.
Because, so when talking about the trailer, I understand, like, if you watch the trailer, it basically spoils nearly all of the kills.
My issue with the trailer is, so if I had watched the trailer first, the issue I would have is this is a movie where I would go into it knowing it's a horror. I go into it knowing that in the trailer they reveal, like, the paintings are attacking people, basically, and there's an evil spirit of some sort. So they reveal already the big bad, or the what's the going on. It was fascinating for me going into this movie not knowing it was even a horror movie.
Yeah, like, it takes, like, 40 minutes before any horror stuff actually happens.
And, like, there's literally...
So the first half is just, like, an art satire thing where, like, all these awful people are...
Just
being
hanging
awful.
That's why I was like, why did you recommend this? What's happening? There's a romantic interest. I'm like, there's that. Is this an LGBTQ movie? There's that. Is this an artsy parody? There's that. Is this just we're all assholes and it's a Coen Brothers type movie? I had no idea. So that was fascinating until, the guy just got killed by a okay, we're going down a horror route? Okay.
Okay, so there are two things to me. First of all, to understand why I was real jazzed about this movie. It is by the same guy that did Nightcrawler, who also directed, it was Jake Gyllenhaal was in that as well. And so Nightcrawler is a straight movie. Like, there isn't any supernatural elements to it. It's just like not even a comedy. It's Nightcrawler is basically about ambulance chasers and like the first scoop of like they... You know,
and don't spoil that one. I will watch it, actually. Yeah, I liked this Gyllenhaal performance. So I will say, Jake was good in this. He was cheesy, but great as a character.
He was very campy and very over the top, but also awesome.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, maybe you really like that. And that's why when I watched the trailer, though, the part that annoyed me about it was literally, minus like the last one, every death sequence in this movie.
Okay, well, if you let me finish, I haven't finished explaining.
Okay.
Like, why the trailer... really did done for me. And so Nightcrawler, again, straight, so there wasn't anything like that. And so I watched the trailer basically like you. Like, I didn't know anything about Velvet Buzzsaw. Mm-hmm. And so for the first, like, minute of the trailer, imagine it was your experience condensed into 2 minutes.
Okay.
Because for the first minute, I'm like, he's directing an art satire, and it's going to be a, you know, regular thing. And then suddenly out of nowhere... paintings start killing people. I'm like, oh shit, this is awesome, you know. And so that's why I got excited for it, because I had your experience just in the trailer instead of
my
full
tantric
movie.
Yeah, my tantric experience of like 40 minutes of like, what the hell is going? Because once I got to, it's a horror, then it was like, and for me at least, though, my annoyance would have been I would have been super excited about the trailer in that, like, what you had done if you had watched it cold, kind of thing,
right?
But my annoyance is when I watch movies, I tend to overthink. Surprise, surprise. And when I overthink, I remember scenes from trailers and I'm like, so these are all the people. Oh, these are all the characters and these are the scenes they're in. Thus, they must have survived to this point, kind of thing. That's where I would be annoyed. Where
I do that too. Like, I have a really good trailer memory and I'll be like, this is that scene, which means this is going to happen. And I know it's, So that happens to me too. But I don't really care.
It didn't interrupt your enjoyment of because like even like towards the end, like some of the last kills were still revealed and
and for me, part of it was like, I know what's going to happen, but are they going to get out of it? Like, maybe this isn't the actual final kill and they kept, you know, there's still a little bit of suspense. Like, I know they don't actually, like, I think they showed actual death in the trailer while they showed they showed two.
There was at least,
they showed two deaths in the trailer. And then,
there was
three possible ones, but they could have gotten out of it.
My favorite death, which was completely unexpected to me, was completely in the trailer.
The...
Sphere kill?
The sphere kill, yeah.
Which, and I mean, I admit, that was probably one of the highlights, was there's the little monologue sequence, which, for the trailer, yes, it's a good purpose where they were like, the people discovered it, they thought it was an art installation, and they just hung around until, like, that was great. That was a sequence where, watching it in the film, I was like, this is hilarious, this is awesome. This was cool, and I liked that moment. In the trailer, yes, it would have been cool and everything, but then in the movie, I'd been like, this character, I know how she's going to die through the whole movie, and I know she's going to... And she was an interesting character who I did not expect her to die when she did. because I had no idea. So yeah. That's where my... I really enjoyed this movie straight cold. I didn't love the movie, but I was like, part of the reason I realized I enjoyed it was knowing nothing about it and then suddenly being surprised with this. I wish I could do that with more movies, where I just go in cold with somebody's recommendation of, this is going to be good, just trust me. And I actually believe them.
Well, you did. I'm glad you enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah.
I had something I was going to say to like cap it off, and I don't remember now. I lost it. Oh, it was Jake Gyllenhaal's delivery of the line, the something truly goddamn strange is going on. Like, that delivery is like one of like my favorite lines in cinema ever. Like, just the way he delivers that. I love that scene. Like, that entire, like, sequence between the two of them, because he's, like, trying to convince... Oh, and the characters' names were just great. Jake Gyllenhaal's name was Morph.
Yeah.
Like, M-O-R-F. Like, it's so dumb. It's, like, a very artsy, stupid name. Like, the Rodra or Redora, Redora. I believe.
Redora.
Like, it was great. So if you've made it this far and don't care that we've spoiled everything, I recommend watching the movie because there's decent dialogue in my opinion. Like it was funny. It's as good as a satire.
It was
on top of the horror elements.
If you're someone who is unfamiliar with the art world and only knows like stereotypes, it was actually pretty enjoyable in that sense of like, this is fun. It's amusing. And then yes, there's a horror element. That part was fine too. It's the other stuff that made this movie, I think, not the kills and stuff. It wasn't like super gory or super like fantastical or even super frightening at parts, but it was just that suspenseful buildup. But the art satire, the performances and the campiness, I thought were highlights of the film. Yeah.
Okay. So we've finished Velvet Buzzsaw. I might put in the comments like the time of when we start and finish. So if you're just joining us and skipped all the spoiler stuff, we're done talking about that. We're not going to reference it anymore. Instead, we're about to talk about Kingdom Hearts.
With more spoilers, probably.
Yeah, oh, definite spoilers. No spoilers for Kingdom Hearts 3, which is the one that just came out. But definite spoilers for, like, the entire series.
The other Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, and was there a decimal
one?
Okay,
so, all right, so let's go ahead and get right into this. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to list off all the Kingdom Hearts games. All right?
4 games.
You think there's 4 games?
That's my guess.
Okay. So we've got Kingdom Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories. Kingdom Hearts 2.
Okay.
Kingdom Hearts Coded. Kingdom Hearts Mobile. Kingdom Hearts 358 Days Over 2.
Wait.
Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep. Kingdom Hearts 3D Dream Drop Distance. Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix. Kingdom Hearts Key. Kingdom Hearts HD 2.5 Remix. Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue, and Kingdom Hearts 3.
Was the prologue an actual game?
Yeah.
And there was a mobile game in there as well, I heard. And the storylines are all connected?
Yep. Not a single one of these games is a spinoff that doesn't tie into the main story.
Even the fucking mobile game?
Yep. Mobile game had story elements.
How many games was that in total?
So, Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix and Kingdom Hearts HD 2.5 Remix are not original games. They're remasters and, like, compilations of all the different games.
Uh-huh.
So, those... I won't technically count those in the total.
Uh-huh.
But...
because they don't have new content.
Right. So, 11.
How long has Kingdom Hearts been out?
First game came out in 2002.
16, 17 years.
Yeah. And just so we're clear, Kingdom Hearts 2... came out March 28th, 2006 in America. And Kingdom Hearts 3 came out 2 weeks ago. So it has been 13 years between Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts 3.
But
with like 8 games of other story in there.
And so if you wanted to like be like, oh, Kingdom Hearts 3, that sounds awesome, I'm going to play it. Can you just like get the 2 remixes and you're done?
I mean, yes. Yeah. So Kingdom Hearts... 1.5 Remix has first Kingdom Hearts, Chain of Memories, and the cinematic scenes from Kingdom Hearts 358 Days Over 2.
So you can just watch the plot.
And then Kingdom Hearts 2.5 Remix has Kingdom Hearts 2, Birth by Sleep, and cinematic scenes from Kingdom Hearts Recoded. So you'd have to buy Kingdom Hearts HD Remix 1.5, 2.5, and the 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue for the full story. Because that has Dream Drop Distance and 0.2 Birth by Sleep, a Fragmentary Passage.
One, what the fuck with the titles? Two, 2.8, because 2.7 was already previously covered, and 2.9, like...
I have no idea. Like, the 2.5 remix, so, like, this was in between 2.5 and 3, so they went with 2.8.
Like, not even 7.5. No, it's a little bit less than that. Okay. Weird. Okay.
Already so that's, my head that's hurts. The amount of... Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, this is just about a kid... who meets like Goofy and Donald, and they travel around Disney, and then they have some fun, and like Sephiroth shows up.
So that's your summary. And there's a spaceship. And there's a spaceship.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I know.
Okay, so kid pals around with Donald and Goofy, has a gummy ship, and there's Sephiroth.
He shows up. Yeah.
Okay.
Around Disney, they fly around.
Okay. That's, I mean, that is a fairly good summary of the first game.
Wait, really? Not even the other games cover that? Like, there's a new plot?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. We're going to, this is what we're doing. We're
all I know
this.
From Final Fantasy Worlds is, like, there's Cloud, there's Tactics, and that's about it.
Tactics?
Final Fantasy Tactics. War of the Roses or Lions or whatever.
That's not in Kingdom Hearts.
You would think at this point, with all these games,
couldn't
get a Ramza. Anyway. No.
Okay, so just for reference, I have only played Kingdom Hearts 2. I started 358 Days Over 2 and didn't like it and stopped. I played 2/3 of Birth by Sleep, and I played the 0.2 Fragmentary Passage on Final Chapter Prologue.
But you didn't play 2.8?
I mean, so 2.8 contained Dream Drop Distance, and I've never played Dream Drop Distance because I heard the game was bad.
Dream Drop Distance. Yeah,
Kingdom Hearts 3D, Dream Drop Distance.
They
3Ds.
Went with 3Ds.
Yeah.
They don't even make fucking sense. Dream Drop, because I was like, Green Drops. No, Dream Drops
Distance.
Distance. Okay, Disney. Oh, wait, who can I blame for this? Disney or like... PlayStation?
You can blame. I want to get his name. I believe last name is Nomura. Tetsuya Nomura is the director of Kingdom Hearts.
Tetsuo. Ah, can't make the Akira reference.
Yeah, yeah. He's the writer, and he's the one that came up with all the non Disney plot, like the through line of all the.
And there is a Disney plot to all of the movies.
I mean, okay,
games
here. Let's
let's go through this. I'm curious now. In a horrific
at any
crash
at
way.
Any point in time, feel free to jump in and let me know, like if you have some comments or things, because I'm just gonna. Okay. I don't have any notes on this. This is pretty much all from my head.
Okay.
And if you have questions, it might trigger something else that I can remember.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to start with Kingdom Hearts. We're going to try and go game chronological order, because if we start like time chronological order, it gets all fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
So Kingdom Hearts starts off with Sora. They start off at... I think it's called Destiny Islands is their world.
And who is Sora?
Sora is just a kid. Okay. He's friends with Riku and Kairi. They're three pals, and so Riku's going to hit on Kairi. They're like teenagers.
Classic
so
love like, triangle probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But they're also all friends.
Of course. You know? Of course.
And Riku's trying to encourage Sora to hit on Kairi, but he says, if you don't do it, I will. Like, he kind of like... forces the competition out of it. So he's looking out for Sora. He doesn't actually want to do it, but he's being a buddy.
So he doesn't actually have an interest in Kairi?
No.
Okay. He's just supposedly. I'm going to hit on that.
I if you don't, I will. You know?
Okay.
He's kind of pushing him.
Okay, I'm curious now. We have 10 more games to go. We'll see where this love triangle goes. I predict someone ends in death.
Okay.
We'll see.
So suddenly darkness shows up. Riku gets sucked into the darkness. Kairi gets sucked into the darkness. Sora gets sucked into the darkness. Sora wakes up in this random town called Traverse Town, I believe. And he doesn't know where Kairi and Riku went, so he's gonna search for him. Okay. And somehow he also now has this thing called a Keyblade. Like, he can just like summon a Keyblade.
And he knows what it is.
No, he doesn't know what it is, but he has it.
He has a giant key now.
Yeah, he has a giant key now. And along the way in Traverse Town, he runs into Donald and Goofy,
yay,
who are searching for King Mickey because King Mickey has gone missing.
Okay.
And at some point, I think either Merlin or Yen Sid is the name they gave the wizard from Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that guy, Fantasia guy. Mm-hmm. He is Yen Sid, Disney backwards.
Oh, God. Okay. I was like, this seems like a weird name. Why does he have such a weird name if he's Disney guy?
It's Disney backwards.
Okay.
Through this, Sora learns about the Keyblade and learns that darkness is encroaching on all these worlds, and he has to go to each world and use the Keyblade to, like, seal the there's like a giant keyhole, and he uses the Keyblade to seal it all off the darkness so it won't invade the world anymore.
Is this like a metaphor for growing up and becoming an adult? As a teenager, you must seal. Anyway.
It's a metaphor for something. You just stick the Keyblade in the hole and you twist it a little bit and fiddle with it until light pours out. Until the darkness
goes away.
Yeah, until the darkness goes away.
Is the darkness literal? Like,
yes.
It's just darkness, or is it an entity known as the darkness?
So these things called Heartless are the main enemies.
Uh-huh.
And they're basically peoples who have, or creatures or people or any sort of living being that gives their heart to the darkness. Like, lets darkness consume them and they turn into these evil monster type things.
Metaphorical, epic. Yeah, sure.
So Sora, Donald, and Goofy... Like, Sora's looking for Kairi and Riku, and Donald and Goofy looking for Mickey, so they team up, and they start going to all these worlds and helping people. They go to... First game, I think there's Tarzan, Alice in Wonderland, Agrabah...
So classic Disney locations.
Yeah, classic Disney locations. No Final Fantasy locations. So, the reason the Final Fantasy characters show up is... Their world has already been destroyed by the darkness. So they show up in just like random worlds. Like Cloud shows up in the Olympus Coliseum of Hercules.
Okay.
Like, and he's just there because he wants to fight Sephiroth. Sephiroth is there.
This is game one.
Yeah, and this is game one.
Okay. Because I was like, which Final Fantasy characters are in here? It's all of them.
I think, could be misremembering, but I think only Cloud and Sephiroth are in... Oh, no, wait. Like, on Destiny Island, there's like... Tidus and Waka and Selphie, I think, from like Final Fantasy X, I want to say. Like, but they're like kids. They're the same age as Sora and them. I think Cloud and Sephiroth are the only other Final Fantasy characters in one.
Okay.
Two has a lot more.
And there is a gummy spaceship.
It's called the gummy ship. It's not actually made out of gummy bears. It's just called the gummy ship.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you use to fly between the worlds.
Okay, very Disney-esque. Ah, yay. Yeah. It's a small world in here, or is it actually only Disney films?
It's only Disney films. I don't think it's a small world as a reference.
Okay, no Tomorrowland and stuff like that.
No.
Okay.
So they go around, visit all the worlds, and it seems like for most of it that Maleficent, her goal is to find the seven princesses of light. And if you get all seven princesses together, you can use them to open the way to get to Kingdom Hearts. And Kingdom Hearts is like control of the universe or something.
The name of the game.
Yeah. Okay. Like that. So that's what Maleficent, it seems like for the most of the game, Maleficent is the bad guy. And she...
Unrelated to the darkness and the heartless.
I mean, she's controlling them and using this to get...
She's the big bad, supposedly.
Supposedly. And the seven princesses are Cinderella, Aurora, Snow White, Belle, Jasmine, Alice, and it turns out the seventh one is Kairi.
Gasp.
So... What actually happens is there's a big showdown. Riku has been not brainwashed, but like tricked by Maleficent to help her, and he like lets the darkness inside him, and
he's the dark version of you, basically, in some way.
Eventually, you know, everything gets sorted out. Sora sacrifices himself because it turns out that Maleficent has had Kairi's body, but her heart wasn't there, and it turns out Sora had Kairi's heart in him the whole time.
All along.
So he plunges the Keyblade into his chest and like frees Kairi so she can come back to her body. But then that turns him into a heartless. But through the power of friendship and Kairi remembering who he is, power of friendship. We're not talking about love. Sora comes back from being a Heartless. But then it turns out that Maleficent has actually been being manipulated this entire time by this guy named Ansem, who wants to get into the... And the door doesn't actually lead to Kingdom Hearts. It leads to something else that Ansem wanted to get his hands
Ansem.
On. Ansem. A-N-S-E-M. Remember this.
Ansem. Yeah. Not no Disney villain comes out with that name.
No, it's just Ansem.
Does he look like a cartoony guy, or he looks like a Kingdom Heartsy guy?
He looks like an anime villain. Imagine Sephiroth, but with like tan skin.
Okay.
Like he's got like the silver hair that's spiky and... Like he looks
is he like a dude? Or yeah, not yeah, like a monster.
No,
like
he's not a monster. He's just not six foot. I mean, he has the typical final JRPG transformation where he turns into like a giant monster.
Of course.
But no, he's just a dude.
All he needs is a mecha form later on.
Yeah, and so you fight him, you kill him, and then. But what happens is Mickey shows up to help at the very end.
Ah.
But Mickey and Riku have to stay behind in this world of darkness to fend off all the Heartless that are coming. And they get locked behind the door as Sora closes it because he's got to protect them. So
Mickey sacrifices himself.
Mickey and Riku both are stuck in the...
I mean,
the,
like, Riku you could expect, yeah, he's a nobody. This isn't... Yeah, Mickey's got a franchise to run. He's a king.
And then that's the end of the game. Like, the game is like, we're going to save them. Like, we know where they are now. We've been spending this entire time looking for them, but now we're going to save them.
Save
Mickey and Riku.
Because we left them behind.
Yeah, we left them behind, but we're going to find them.
It ends on a wait for the sequel.
Kind of, yeah.
So it's not even like a movie that, it has a closure. Like, even Star Wars in the first one ended.
Nope.
They, right away.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So then we move on to Chain of Memories, which introduces Organization 13. And remember this, because they're going to be a big part of
things. Organization 13.
Yeah. Organization 13 and Sora, Donald, and Goofy end up at this place called Castle Oblivion.
This is right after the events of Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yeah.
Now
they're... So they're in Castle Oblivion, and they're told by these people, Organization 13, that you have to get to the top of the tower, and it'll help Sora remember things, because... What happens is when you're in Castle Oblivion, you start losing your memories. Okay. You start forgetting things. And as Sora climbs Castle Oblivion, he starts remembering this girl named Naminé, who we've never heard of before. But he's like...
I was going to just ask, like, what happened to Kairi and all this?
Yeah, he's forgetting about Kairi and Riku, but he remembers this girl named Naminé, and he made a promise to her that he's got to save her. So he's got to make it to the top of Castle Oblivion because she's trapped there, and he has to find her.
Why is she trapped there?
And it turns out that Organization 13 is using Naminé to manipulate Sora and make him forget his memories because they need Sora for something. They need Sora's...
So he's completely forgotten about the Mickey quest, and he's now gone on this side quest for his side chick.
Yep.
And, like, we don't even know what happened to his main chick.
Correct.
Okay.
And so, along the way, you meet the Organization 13 members, and you kill a bunch of them.
Anybody famous, or...?
There's Zexion, there's Larxene, Vexen, there's Lexaeus, there's Marluxia.
These names are really stupid and annoying to me, and I don't know why...
They all have X's in them. It's going to become important.
This is so dumb because I know where that ends up. Like, Ansem, though. The only thing I can think of with Ansem is he's handsome.
No.
That would be a great twist if he was
handsome
the guy.
Ansem?
Or if he was actually the guy from Beauty and the Beast.
No. Beast is his own character.
Not Beast. The villain from
Gaston.
Gaston! Gaston should be in this. He should highlight. Anyway, continue on.
So... At the same time, Riku is also in Castle Oblivion.
What?
And he's going down because he's got to save Sora. And I don't know. This is the part where it gets weird. Because, again, I've not actually played Chain of Memories.
He was trapped with Mickey first, fighting off, and now he's somehow in Castle Oblivion.
Yeah. And what happens is Sora gets to Naminé, and Naminé is like, listen, they were making me do this stuff. I don't actually want to hurt you. Get in this flower, and it's going to restore all your memories. And Sora's like, okay. And he does that. And Donald and Goofy are like, can we get in a flower? And Naminé's like, sure, get in a flower.
So, side note, has anyone here read It? Anyway, continue on. You have not read It.
I have read It, and that's disgusting.
I'm just saying, I'm sorry. Blame Stephen King. Let's move on, buddy.
So, Sora's in a flower. Donald and Goofy are in a flower. And then this guy named Diz shows up. And we don't know who Diz is. It's D... Uppercase D, lowercase I, uppercase Z, just so we're clear.
At this point, I feel like in the in the game, Sora's got to go around asking, spell your name, motherfucker. Spell your name for me.
And he's got like a mask on. We don't know who he is.
Cartoonish or Sephirothy?
He's got like... It's like red bandages, red and black bandages wrapped around his face.
Okay.
Like, and so Riku shows up and is like, dude, what's going on? And it's like, and Diz and Namine are like, hold on, we're trying to help Sora.
Oh.
So don't worry about it, but you got to go on this quest. And he's like, nah, I'm not going to go on this quest. I'm going to do my own thing. And so that's the end of Chain of Memories.
Riku saying, I got to do my own thing, which was his own thing was to save Sora.
So Diz gives him an option of taking the path of light or the path of darkness. And instead he goes on the path of dawn. Ooh. Like, I don't know.
Okay. We're going. We don't need roads.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't control Riku. You're just...
Well, so Chain of Memories, from what I understand, you play as Sora. And then once you beat the game as Sora, you unlock Riku mode, where you get to play through Riku's story as like an extra...
Okay.
You know, thing.
And you walk the path of dawn.
I mean, that's the end of the game. Oh. Like it's like the end cutscene or whatever.
Okay. Got it.
So now we're on to Kingdom Hearts 2.
Okay, so there's only one in between. That's not too bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's after Kingdom Hearts 2 that things start to go batshit.
Okay, and one side note. Did Disney ever do anything clever where they introduced some characters and they weren't out in movies but later came out?
No.
No, okay. No. It's always followed the movies and stuff.
Yep.
Let's continue on.
So Kingdom Hearts 2 starts out with a guy named Roxas.
He's got some X's in his name.
R-O-X-A-S. Now... Who has a name that also has R-O-A and S in it? Spell it, switch it around. Maybe you get S-O-R-A.
Sora?
So Roxas, who looks kind of like Sora, but we're not exactly sure what's going on.
With just an X thrown into his
name? With just an X thrown into his name. He starts in this place called Twilight Town, and he has these friends. And there's this guy named Sephir, who is from Final Fantasy VIII. And there's a guy named Vivi. It's this little black mage that just runs around, and he's kind of like cool.
Goofix.
Not Goofix, no. It's just random people, and there's this place called Twilight Town, and you Roxas play as has friends. You play as Roxas, and so like
he must be good.
Yeah, so like for the first 3 hours or so, you play as Roxas, and it's the tutorial of Kingdom Hearts 2, which is this is like a very famous kind of thing. Like this is the one of the worst introductions ever because everyone was like super excited to play Kingdom Hearts 2,
and you don't play as
and you don't play as Sora for like 3 to 4 hours, and you're just like, what the fuck is going on?
And have they established at this point, like, X's are bad?
No.
So we're just like, oh, it's a guy with an X in his name.
Yeah, it's a guy named Roxas who looks kind of like Sora, but not really.
Keyblade?
He has a Keyblade.
Okay.
And so it turns out at the end, as things start going real funky in Twilight Town, and Roxas is noting all this weird stuff, and it turns out Roxas is a nobody who is part of Sora. And I don't remember when in Kingdom Hearts 2 they explain this, but what happens when a person gives their heart to darkness is the heart part turns into the heartless, and their body turns into a nobody.
That's why when you said nobody, I was like, nobody. But then I was like, wait a second. Is this nobody? Are Pretty we being much. Actual like punny here? And like,
and so when... Again, we're starting to get into parts that I'm not 100% sure on. But this is my explanation, and this is how I rationalize it.
And you played this game.
Yes, and I've played this game.
Did you enjoy this game?
Oh, yeah. I love Kingdom Hearts 2. It's one of my favorites.
Continue.
I really like Organization 13, but we'll get to that.
I really like how we just talked about Velvet Buzzsaw, and now we're talking about Kingdom Hearts 2. Continue. Like, I'm just listening to this and going, really? And, I mean, I like professional wrestling, so I can't really... But, like... Really? Continue.
So, Kingdom Hearts 2 was done really well. Like, it, for its time, it made sense. It's all the after stuff that gets tricky. Anyway, so when Sora stabbed himself and made himself a heartless, Roxas kind of showed up.
Because that's his body. Yeah. He's a nobody.
Yeah.
And he also was a heartless, and the two of them must exist.
And okay. So he gives, and Roxas ends up giving himself up to help restore all of Sora's memories. And then, so the end of the tutorial sequence, and when you finally get the Kingdom Hearts 2 title screen, the flower opens up and Sora is restored back to his normal self.
Which occurred before the whole Oblivion Castle thing.
No, this is after.
Did he stab himself again?
No, but I mean...
You get the point, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Roxas existed before the castle, during the Castle Oblivion stuff. Anyway.
Okay.
So, at this point...
Is Sora okay?
Yeah, Sora's fine. Donald and Goofy are good. Everything starts.
So the little mage guy and the other guy, were they Donald and Goofy, or they were just...
No, like... they were just other people. Like, Twilight Town is an actual town. Like, Roxas was just had his memory wiped or something. I don't remember.
This was just a tutorial.
Yeah, this was just a tutorial. All right. And you find out that all of the Organization 13 are nobodies. And their goal is they are trying to get their bodies back. Like, they want to become whole again. So that's what the organization... But they're, you know, using the Heartless, and they're using... And there's, like, actual enemy nobodies, because they're, like, bad as well, but they're, like, tougher enemies.
But they're not, like, Disney. Like, it's not, like, Hades turned into a nobody.
Right. No, it's never. Okay. It's not really ever like that.
Okay. And Disney people, are they... Well, I guess we're just starting. We finished the tutorial. Are there still Disney characters in here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, so, like, why the hell are they...
This is so much plot and exposition, and none of it seems to mention, like, Jafar.
So in Kingdom Hearts 2, you start going to different worlds. There's Lion King and Atlantis, where you go meet Ariel, and you go back to Aladdin and Agrabah, and you fight Jafar again. And like you, when you go to the worlds, there's all sorts of Disney stuff happening in the worlds. But the Disney stuff almost never relates to the larger plot.
I was about to ask, like, is like, are they like, hey, yeah, we need to like save the princess. She fell asleep and stuff after eating an apple. Oh, and by the way, there's a whole bunch of Heartless back there. Can you take them out?
So like almost every Disney world, some play with it, but a lot of the first and second game, you just basically play through the movie plot, but with Heartless like showing up. So there's like twists to the plot. Like,
okay.
Scar commands Heartless and the Lion King.
And he knows they're Heartless and stuff. Yeah. It's not like, oh, these are my hyenas, but the hyenas are secretly Heartless.
No, he's okay. Like, they're actual Heartless and things like that.
But he doesn't acknowledge that I'm working with the darkness and stuff. He's just like,
yeah,
I'm
he does. I mean, they're evil. Of course.
Okay, so he's just like, I still want to take over Pride Rock, and I still want to be just the King Lion. And I happen to side with this all-knowing entity known as the darkness to help me with this.
I mean, I don't know if it goes that far, because there's a thing called, they call order, where like Donald, Goofy, and Sora, like when they enter a world, they don't tell people that they're from other worlds, because these worlds aren't all connected.
The talking duck.
Like, there's magic around them, and so they like change to, like Donald turns into like a little bird that looks kind of like Zazu and the Lion King.
Really? And, they change in each of the worlds? Yeah,
just to, like, blend in more. Like, in Halloween Town, they look Halloween-y and things like that.
I did not know that happened. In the first one, that happens, too?
Yeah, happens in the first one, too.
So they disguise themselves. Okay, I'll give you some credit there, Kingdom Hearts, for disguising the talking duck and the talking dog.
I mean, okay. In Atlantica, which is the Little Mermaid world, like, Goofy is literally Goofy head on a turtle body.
All right. No one will suspect this. It's a world of magic.
Okay, so Sora and Donald and Goofy go back to their thing. King Mickey shows up about halfway through. Basically, there's this place called Hollow Bastion where everyone has, like, remnants have gathered. Like, Scrooge McDuck is there, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. You've got Squall and Tifa and Aerith and Cloud. Cloud's still hunting Sephiroth.
Did you ever have to fight Sephiroth?
He's a bonus boss in Kingdom Hearts 1.
Of course, he's always a bonus.
Yeah. He's also a bonus boss in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Ah, good. But, like, so Mickey, no memories or things of, like, yeah, you guys left me and ditched me.
Oh, no, he remembers. And he's like, he comes back and he's like, hey, what's going on? And then, like, all these Heartless attack and Goofy dies.
What?
For, like, 5 minutes. But, like, he dies. He, like, Heartless, like, shoots a bomb at him, and Goofy does a down Mr. President and, like, jumps in front of it to take it for Mickey. And they think he's dead, but it's only because they don't know how to check for a pulse.
On a talking
and
dog.
So they, yeah, and so they just run a screaming, and then turns out, like, after you have this big battle where you're all angry that Goofy died, like, he's like, hey, guys, I'm okay. Like, you guys just suck at recognizing unconsciousness, apparently.
Do you have a medic in the party?
I mean, Donald's a mage and Goofy's a warrior.
Okay, that explains it completely. Yeah. It's Donald. He's like, fuck Goofy.
So, and along the way, like, Organization 13 members are, like, manipulating different worlds.
I still can't tell if they're bad or if they're just,
bad.
Like,
they're bad guys.
Okay.
My favorite is named Demyx, D-E-M-Y-X. He plays a guitar that can control water, like, and he just, like, plays, and he, like, shoots, like, water music notes at you that you have to dodge. And he's like a water magician, but he plays a guitar. I think it's actually, I don't know, it's not an actual guitar. It's a specific instrument that I can't remember off the top of my head, but it looks like a guitar. It's like a sitar. It's
sitar,
a
sitar, I was about to say.
He's my favorite Organization 13 member. I love him. He's so goofy. Because he doesn't ever want to fight, but he like has to because he's part of Organization 13. And he's like, oh, Jesus. Okay, fine.
Why does he have a guitar?
Because each Organization 13 member has a unique like weapon and like
keyblade abilities. So it has to be like, not just a traditional weapon, but an object and a weapon.
Okay, so like also all of the Organization 13 members have really like weird and like badass titles. So if you give me a second, I'm gonna look them up and I'm gonna share them with you. Jesus Christ, we haven't even gotten to
out
of Kingdom Hearts 2. We're not even halfway. We haven't even gotten to like Xemnas yet, who is Ansem's nobody. But it's not actually Ansem, it's Xehanort, because Ansem the Wise is actually Diz and has been helping them all along. Because Ansem the Wise is actually a good guy, and the bad guy Ansem is actually Terra, who is Xehanort. But Terra, Aqua, and Ventus were the original Keyblade wielders, and Ventus looks like Sora and Roxas because Ventus is actually in Sora's heart along with Roxas, and Aqua is stuck in the darkness with Mickey.
We gotta make this a full sequence. Like, I want to hear all this slowly as you tell me this is a good game that you enjoyed playing.
Well, so all of that comes in the later games. Like, nothing that I just said is actually, aside from Xemnas, is in Kingdom Hearts 2. Like, Kingdom Hearts 2 is all about Sora, Donald, and Goofy versus Organization 13, who are nobodies trying to get their bodies back. And Xemnas' goal as, like, head nobody, because he's Ansem's nobody, because Ansem was a Heartless in Kingdom Hearts 1. And so Xemnas is, you know, Ansem with an X. And
Ansem with an yeah.
X-E-M-N-A-S. Ansem, Xemnas. Yeah.
Okay. Still haven't, they don't in 2 mention either, oh, by the way, all the X's.
No, X's.
It's just a coincidence.
X's are like an epilogue in Dream Drop Distance. Like, X's were a big reveal. This is what we
did all along, yeah, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
X gonna give it to you. X gonna give it to you.
So Xemnas is nicknamed the Superior of the In-Between.
Okay.
His weapon is like a light. He has like two lightsabers, like red lightsabers that look kind of like
Star Wars franchise is part of Disney.
I mean, it wasn't at the time, but they were basically lightsabers. You've got, let's see, I'm gonna look up Demix here. Demix is the melodious nocturne. He has a sitar that he uses to control water.
The melodious nocturne.
Yeah, there's Luxord, who is the gambler of fate. And he has a deck of playing cards as his weapon.
Gambit.
Yeah. Larkzine is the savage nymph.
Ooh.
She is the only female Organization 13 member.
The token female.
And she has knives and the power of lightning.
Okay.
There's Axel, who is one of the like the fan favorites.
He's the guy strapped to like two wheels. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he actually has two wheels.
What?
Like, his weapon is, he's called the Luna Diviner, also known as Devil Dancing in the Moon, depending on the translation. He has these two spike wheels. I was reading wrong. Syx is the Luna Diviner, and he has a claymore. Axel is the Flurry of Dancing Flames, because he's a fire guy, and he has chakrams. Like the two spike chakrams that are basically wheels. And so he is kind of like Axel from Twisted Metal.
Yeah. I was trying to make a clever Twisted Metal 2 reference, and Disney, fuck you, Disney.
There's Zigbar, who is the free shooter. He has a pair of ray guns called arrow guns that he can turn into a sniper rifle.
Okay.
And he can manipulate space and time to teleport himself.
This feels very Metal Gear-ish, actually, in a way.
I'm telling you, like,
at some point,
Metal Gear and Kingdom Hearts have the most convoluted storylines.
At some point, you'll have to tell me the Metal Gear plots.
Oh, that one's going to be a good one, too. I'm definitely into that. Anyway, so they fight at Hollow Bastion. They drive away the Heartless. They go back, visit world some more. Then at the end, they find that, like, Roxas was actually the 13th member of Organization 13.
Okay.
But he had forgotten his memories, but now he's back and he's going to try and kill Sora, but Sora accepts him and Roxas goes back into his heart.
Power of friendship.
And then it turns out Riku like went on some quest and he looks like Ansem now. Like he looks like bad guy Ansem. But Diz is real Ansem, and he's Ansem the Wise. And what happened was Ansem the Wise had a...
Diz was the dude with the bandages and stuff. So he takes them off,
and Ansem the Wise is like blonde hair, beard, like nice looking kind of guy.
So he must be good.
Yeah, exactly. And Ansem the Wise had this disciple who took his name and pretended to be Ansem. But Ansem the Wise is the actual good one because he was researching Kingdom Hearts to try and like do good with it.
What we were trying to get along to the whole first thing where they were like, no, we just bullshitted all that. But no, this guy actually was trying to do Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, but then his disciple, who took his name, wanted to manipulate the darkness and control all the worlds. And he was more obsessed with the darkness than the light. You know how it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he split himself up into a Heartless and a Nobody. The Heartless
Ansem?
Ansem.
Okay. Ansem the Wise.
No, Evil Ansem split himself up. Ansem the Wise is still one guy.
Okay.
I think he sacrifices himself at the end of Kingdom Hearts 2. I think he's dead. I don't actually know. I don't remember. Okay. And so Xemnas is the nobody, and he's trying to get his body back and everything, but he's also evil like Ansem, so he's probably doing the same thing that Ansem's doing.
Is he one of the Organization 13 dudes?
He's the head of the Organization 13.
Xemnas. And then the Heartless Ansem is just Heartless Ansem?
Yeah, but he's dead. We killed him in Kingdom Hearts 1. Yeah.
So you killed the Heartless, but now you must kill the...
Xemnas, the nobody.
So you're just fighting one big bad.
It's the same guy, just
two aspects of him.
Yeah.
And every time you say Heartless, for unrelated to this, like Kanye West, like 808 and Heartbreak plays in the background. So it's just with like low synths and auto tunes in the background. But anyway.
Okay. And so you kill all the Organization 13 members. You kill Xemnas. You save the world. Riku turns back into Riku. He doesn't look like Ansem anymore. I don't remember why he turns into Ansem, but like it's a big thing because like you think Ansem's back, but it turns out it's just Riku and Ansem's body for some stupid reason. And Kairi's like off in Destiny Island chilling.
What happened to her? Yeah.
Like she's just protected and fine in Destiny Island. And Sora's like, I'm going to get back to her eventually, but he can't because he's got to save the world.
And no name Naminé.
Oh yeah. Naminé turns out is a nobody of Kairi. But she's not supposed to be able to exist because Princesses of Lights aren't supposed to be able to be split into Heartless and Nobody. The only problem was when Kairi's heart was in Sora's heart and he stabbed himself with the Keyblade, he made Naminé and she's not supposed to exist. But which is why she has weird memory-making powers and stuff like that.
And she knows Sora before Kairi exists. Like, they knew each other before. So, timeline-wise... like
no.
Because, like... in the second, or in the Oblivion Tower, he knew her and she existed.
Well, no, he didn't know her. That's the thing.
They were false memories?
They were false memories. She has the power to put false memories into his head.
Plot hole explained. Yeah. Thank you, Disney. Okay.
And so Kingdom Hearts 2 ends kind of wrapping things up.
So you don't expect sequels and stuff. This ends on a definitive...
I mean, there's plot, like certain plot lines, I think... I don't know. I can't actually remember how it ends. I think Riku and people are chilling. They haven't found Kairi yet. There's a reason they can't go back for her, I think. I don't remember. It's been real fuzzy. It's been a long time since I played Kingdom Hearts 2.
Do you ever visit Ferngully?
No. Also, I don't think Ferngully is Disney.
It is. It's a Disney franchise. Yeah.
I thought it was one of those like...
oh, independent, cool, artsy movies? I don't know. I always assumed it was Disney.
I don't think it's Disney.
Oh.
I have to look into
that. I'm
going
to ask you to look it up. Probably not for this show, but I am curious.
So that's the end of Kingdom Hearts 2. Uh-huh. And then Kingdom Hearts 2's teaser ends with, like, there's a secret ending epilogue thing that you can get.
Uh-huh.
And it ends on a shot of all these, like, people fighting and then all these Keyblades just on the ground, like a huge Keyblade graveyard. Just,
so I thought keyblades are like rare items.
They are, but why are there so many?
It's like the Jedi all wiped out.
And so this is the first three games.
Again, setting up for Star Wars. Everything here. This is all the messages. We're going to take Star Wars from you.
And so my little, like, off-the-cuff rant earlier about all the side plots and everything, because, I mean, where are we at? We're almost over an hour already, right?
Technically, we are over an hour, and we've covered 3 of the 11/9.
Yeah.
So there's still more.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for Dream Drops, like, Distance. It's almost like a Migos song. Drop, top.
What's box. The next game? So, next to Heart is... I don't know anything about the mobile game, so I'm going to skip that one. There's 358 Days Over 2, which the main character is Roxas, and you actually explore what Organization 13 was doing prior to Castle Oblivion.
Prior to Castle Oblivion, even. Right. So,
yeah.
Because Roxas was... So, they go back to the... There's a fucking game about the tutorial in the...
Oh, yeah. Roxas is super important. And there's also this...
Is he popular? Like, the people were like, ooh, tutorial. We really like that guy. We want a whole game about him.
People liked Organization 13. And they liked certain members of Organization 13.
Your guitar guy, is he back in this one?
I mean, he's back. They're all of them are back. Like they, it's like a prologue. Just
why do people like these guys?
Because
I'm like, they're not Disney people.
They're original characters that are like anime-ish, and you've got like each one has its own power. It's kind of like Power Rangers type thing, you know? Like, you know, that's why I like it, because there's like a guy with a sitar that controls water, a guy that, you know, has playing cards as a weapon, like Gambit. Why do people like the X-Men? Why do people like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
How long did it take to beat Kingdom Hearts 2?
I'd say it's a 30 to 40 hour game.
Okay, so not even like 100 hour kind of game.
No, it's fairly compact.
Okay, I was thinking it would be much more convoluted with all this stuff. No, okay. Mm. So then this game occurs, and you play as Roxas.
Yeah.
And you go through, and I guess backstory. This is all backstory?
Yeah, and you basically learn... So again, I haven't played this one, or I started playing it and didn't quite get to it, but there are these things called replicas. Like they made a replica of Riku during Chain of Memories. But like the replicas are like clones and like things that aren't supposed to exist because they don't have a soul. They don't have a heart.
Because we've already done Heartless and Nobody's.
But these replicas are things that just, they're like bodies that can like function, but they don't have a heart. So they make this replica named Zion. Zion? Zion?
How do you spell
his motherfucker? X-I-O-N.
Not Z. Okay.
Yeah, X-I-O-N. It's another that she's part of Organization 13.
So when you played through this, you were just like, huh, they must really like X's. And didn't worry or get like...
It turns out that all the Organization 13 members, their original forms or like people that they were is there are the names without the X. So just like Roxas is Sora's nobody, like... Axel is actually Lei, L-E-A, or Lee. Vexen is Evan, E-V-E-N. Zigbar like is Braig, B-R-A-I-G. You know, so like each one has...
Human name.
It has a human name.
Is this why recently you've changed your...
Yes.
You changed your Twitter name and there's like an X in it.
Yep.
It's like X-Mant or something. Like
yep. Hey, I'm really excited for Kingdom Hearts 3, okay?
Fair enough.
Anyway, so stuff happens in 358 Days Over 2. They're trying... Basically, Zion is their backup plan to Roxas. Because Roxas... They weren't sure if Roxas was going to be able to wield the Keyblade. But he can. And so they don't need him anymore. Because what they were going to do was if Roxas couldn't wield the Keyblade, they were going to take Sora's soul from Castle Oblivion and put it into Zion so she could wield the Keyblade. But because she's a replica and she's not supposed to exist, things start going funky, so they have to kill her, and then everyone forgets that Zion exists, which is why you don't hear about her at all in Kingdom Hearts 2 or Chain of Memories, because her memory is completely gone. But it turns out that Axel, Roxas, and Zion were really good friends before all this shit went down.
Okay, when they were bodiless, when they were nobodies?
Yeah. And so, like...
So, like, the nobodies didn't just exist in a tortured existence. They're like, hey, yeah, that's my buddy over there. Yeah. Let's go get a hot dog after the game.
Yeah.
And then we'll find
out. They like ice cream. Sea salt ice cream.
You say that like that's actually true.
That's a thing in the game. Sea salt ice cream.
Okay. Why not give backstories to your weird villains?
And then, so, After that, we've got Birth by Sleep. And Birth by Sleep is the story of Aqua, Ventus, and Terra. This happens well before Kingdom Hearts 1. So this
we don't know who those three characters are yet.
I mean, they're the player characters of... So Birth by Sleep is three campaigns. One you control Ventus, one you control Terra, one you control Aqua. And they're all trying to become Keyblade Masters.
Okay, but they haven't been mentioned in 1 and 2.
No, okay. This is their completely new characters.
New characters, but in a prequel.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're following a guy named Eraqus, which is E-R-A-Q-U-S. Square Enix is the one who made Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, fuck you. Really? We're going to get that meta about this?
Yeah, Eraqus is like a Keyblade Master, and he's teaching them. He's the apprentice. And there's this guy named Xehanort, who is...
How do you spell his name?
X-E-H-A-N-O-R-T.
Evil. He must be evil.
He is evil.
Because I was about to say, these characters, do they have X's in them later? Are they Oblivion 13 people? Or not Oblivion?
So here's what happens.
Yeah. I'm already paranoid as hell.
Xehanort manipulates Terra into thinking that he's doing good stuff. But it turns out he's actually doing evil stuff and getting closer to darkness. Kind of like how Maleficent manipulated Riku.
Or Anakin with the Jawas.
I
take it back. Sorry. Better one. Anakin with all the little Jedi children. Anyway, continue on the journey to the dark side.
Xehanort like basically primes Terra, and when Terra fully accepts darkness, Terra, Aqua, and Ventus are all friends, and so the climax is them all fighting Xehanort. But then Xehanort dies, but he ends up taking over Terra's body. So that's why Terra's body with Xehanort inside of it gets zapped in time and ends up the apprentice to Ansem the Wise.
Oh. In like time travel? Or this happens chronologically and it makes sense?
I don't fucking know.
Because I'm like, Xehanort...
Point is...
So Xehanort was in Terra's body.
Xehanort in Terra's body looks exactly like Ansem from the first game. And it turns out Xehanort in Terra's body is the apprentice of Ansem the Wise that we had learned about in Kingdom Hearts 2.
And he was a Keyblade Master dude who then became a wizard.
And so, like, Eraqus and Xehanort were both, like, studying the darkness and Kingdom Hearts and things like that. And Eraqus is the good one. And Xehanort, like, straddles the line and, you know, becomes obsessed with darkness. And so then Xehanort takes Ansem's name, blah, blah, blah. I get that. Aqua tries to save... So, wait, no. First of all, Ventus gets split in half by Xehanort into Ventus and Vanitas.
Okay. A body and a heartless, or like a just split. Just okay.
Good guy, bad guy.
Because I keep like overthinking when anybody gets put into. Is that like a heartless? Like, let me put out my chart.
There's no heartless in.
Is it a replica? No.
Maybe. Who knows? But Xehanort is doing like Batman Gambit stuff where he's got like everything going on with like Terra and Ventus and Aqua. And what he wants Ventus and Vanitas to fight, because when they fight, it'll create a strong enough essence for him to get the Keyblade. And when I say key, I mean the Greek letter key, because it is the ultimate Keyblade.
Wait, Greek letter like chi, C-H-I?
Yes. But
the chi blade.
But it's pronounced Keyblade.
Because otherwise it would be totally spelled different if it was the... But they spell it or reference it as the Greek letter...
Yeah, it's the Greek letter...
Dash
blade.
It's an X.
Like here, if you want to take a look at it.
Wow. No, I know the Greek letter and stuff, but really they picked the X one.
Yeah.
There's no way in the beginning they knew this was happening.
I don't know, man.
Some dude doing like the first game. Yeah, so Donald and Mickey and Jafar and like Scar from The Lion King. No. See, it's all related to the Greek letter X.
Anyway, like
what?
The Greek letter X blade is like the ultimate Keyblade, and so Xehanort wants that so he can unlock Kingdom Hearts or something, whatever. Like, but Ventus refuses to fight Vanitas until the very end, and then they fight, and it happens. And then Aqua's like,
"On a lava planet, this happens. Yeah. I know this."
And then
this is all just foreshadowing.
Aqua's trying to save both of them, and she gets trapped in darkness. Because she throws Ventus and Terra out of the darkness. And when she throws, like, the big climax or whatever, there's all the darkness. And they think they kill Xehanort. But she doesn't realize that Xehanort's in Terra. So she throws Terra to safety. And that's how he ends up with Ansem. And she throws Ventus to safely. Except Ventus ends up in Sora's heart. But he doesn't know that...
Wait, in Sora's heart?
Yes.
Sora, who's like a little kid at this time or something. Like into the baby Sora? Like, are we going with that or are we going with time traveling?
There's time travel. Some... We haven't even gotten to young Xehanort, who is different from regular Xehanort, who is different from Ansem, who is different from Xemnas.
This feels like Rick
and Morty. In Kingdom Hearts 3, there is Xemnas, Ansem, Xehanort, and young Xehanort all existing at the same time.
And you know who the big bad in Kingdom Hearts 3 is.
It's Xehanort.
So you think.
So that is Birth by Sleep.
Is that like the last one? Or no, we haven't gotten to the 3D one yet.
Yeah, there's Dream Drop Distance.
Yes.
I don't even... Honestly, this one I don't really know anything about. But there's like... Xehanort, it's revealed that he can like see through X's. Or what? Like he has the power over the letter X or something stupid like that.
So this is the one where they finally say, aha,
Dream Drop Distance has the most stuff that I don't understand. Like, I can't summarize it because I actually don't know. Why don't I see if it has a...
And it's a video game. Like, this all just sounds like you're just watching cutscenes for hours.
Yeah. This is like... So, Dream Drop Distance...
Are there actual Disney worlds anymore in this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you visit... In Dream Drop Distance, you visit, like, Hunchback of Notre Dame... In Birth by Sleep, you visit all the Disney worlds.
Oh, look, it's Buzz Lightyear and Woody, by the way.
He's in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. My mistake.
In Birth by Sleep, they have the worlds that got destroyed by the time Kingdom Hearts came around. So you go to, like, Snow White Land and Cinderella Land. And you know,
the classic princesses.
Yeah. Beauty and the Beast, Frozen. I think. Frozen's in Kingdom Hearts 3. Mm-hmm. Imagine all the modern stuff that's in Kingdom Hearts 3. You've got Toy Story, you've got Monsters, Inc., you've got Frozen, you've got Tangled.
Wreck-It Ralph?
He's a summon. There's not an actual world for him.
So I was about to say, that gets really
weird. Very meta. Yeah. Big Hero 6.
Oh.
Yeah. An interesting choice. The only like Marvel comic bookish one that they got, but pretty good. Okay. So I'm going to read...
Still no Star Wars and Kingdom Hearts
3. I'm going
3.
To read the Wikipedia entry for part of Dream Drop Distance, and we're going to see how much we can get from this based on what I've explained so far. Anticipating Master Xehanort's return, Yen Sid put Sora and Riku through a Mark of Master exam to bestow them with the power necessary to rescue their own missing allies and counter Xehanort. For the exam, they are sent to worlds that remain trapped in a sleeping state after being destroyed by the Heartless. They must unlock 7 keyholes in order to fully restore them to the Realm of Light. They're also advised to create benevolent spirit dream eaters to guide them and battle the malevolent nightmare dream eaters that infest the sleeping worlds.
Okay, so far I'm like, I got that. I understand. You got to go to 7 worlds, beat the 7 worlds, create like 7 spirits. Yeah, just like the princesses and stuff. This is standard video game fare.
Yeah. The two are separated at the start of the test, each finding himself in an alternate version of the world.
Dope.
Throughout the exam, Sora and Riku repeatedly encounter a gray-haired youth who is accompanied by Xemnas and Ansem, respectively. Upon completing the exam, Sora and Riku arrive in the world that never was instead of the Realm of Light. Revealing that he and his associates have lured Sora into a trap, the youth places Sora into a deep sleep where Sora defeats Xemnas within his own dreams. However, Sora's heart is swallowed by darkness, but is encased with Ventus's armor for protection. Meanwhile, Ansem reveals that Riku has spent the entire exam traveling through Sora's dreams as a dream eater. Riku defeats Ansem and is confronted by the youth, who reveals himself to be Xehanort's adolescent self, tasked by his present self with assembling a new Organization 13, composed of 13 incarnations of Xehanort from across time, including hosts of his fragmented heart. Afterwards, a revived Master Xehanort appears and attempts to turn Sora into his final host, intending to pit his 13 Seekers of Darkness against 7 Guardians of Light in order to achieve his ultimate goal of recreating the key, Greek letter, blade. He is foiled when Sora is rescued by Lei, the revived human form of Axel from the original organization. Xehanort and his incarnations fade back to their original time periods, assuring that both factions will inevitably clash.
Because all the Xehanorts are back in their own respective timelines or places or worlds. And okay, I mean, I was following it. It's very Kingdom Heartsy. Okay.
So the grand plan and the plot going into Kingdom Hearts 3 is that Xehanort is trying to create 13 versions of himself.
Again, which was the plot of that last game, which he successfully did, but they defeated him. So he's going to try again in a bigger, better named game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Got it.
And so there you go. Now you know the Kingdom Hearts plot. Or do you?
I was like, is there more? Did we cover all the games?
Now we're into Kingdom Hearts 3.
Wait, wasn't there like a 2.8?
Oh, yeah, there's 2.8, which is the 0.2 a fragmentary passage in which you play as Aqua, who is trapped in the world of darkness, and you just see, basically you see her perspective as she's in the darkness. She fights a bunch of Heartless, and then you see her, she shows up, and the cutscene from the end of Kingdom Hearts 1 where Riku and Mickey are fighting off the Heartless, Aqua is there and saves them in some way and gets sucked further into the darkness because she saves them from the Heartless that are coming after
them. So they covered the plot twist of why Mickey and Riku escaped. It was through Aqua, which like 10 games later they explained it.
Yep.
Okay, that's fairly simple. I got it. Kingdom Hearts 3. All right,
there's going to be a quiz after the show. Make sure you sharpen your number 2 pencils.
Spelling counts.
Yeah. There's going to be an essay at the end.
This is just so weird that, like, this dude named Xehanort becomes the big bad. There's 13 plus Xehanorts through to, like, he is that beloved. Do you like this villain, Xehanort, or is he, like, a dumbass?
I mean, I've never played a game with Xehanort. Like, I guess I played Birth by Sleep, but, like...
Oh, he wasn't in the second game.
No, that was Xemnas.
Wasn't that... Have you ever fought an incarnation of Xehanort? It seems like you might have fought Ansys or Handsome Ansys.
I mean, Handsome Ansem.
Yeah.
Ansem and...
So secretly you were fighting Xehanort?
I was secretly fighting Xehanort the whole time.
How old is Sora at this point? He's probably just like 2 years older? Or has
his name... He's still like 16. Like he starts out 14. I think like 2 years go by through all of this. Maybe 3. Like he's still a teenager.
Okay, so he hasn't...
Haley Joel Osment, on the other hand, has aged like nearly 20 years.
Oh, he's the voice of the kid?
Haley Joel Osment voices Sora. Still? In 2002, he was a kid the same age as Sora. In 2019, he is still voicing Sora, but he's like 30.
Oh, yeah, Goofy, let's handle this now. Okay. And the girl is somewhere, Kylie...
I think Kyrie was voiced by Mandy Moore?
Okay, but like she's alive and so they just kind of dropped out all the love interest story.
In Kingdom Hearts 3...
I thought it would play more of a role, and I guess I was right in that there were deaths, but there were so many friggin' weird, like, soul-splitting death things.
In Kingdom Hearts 3, Kyrie and Axel are learning to become Keyblade Masters. Like, they're getting their own Keyblades like Sora. They're, like, under tutelage of someone. This is information known prior to Kingdom Hearts 3. This is not a spoiler.
How was the tutorial of Kingdom Hearts 3?
A lot better.
They learned their lesson. You're not playing as, like, Roxxon.
The first world is Olympus, and you get the tutorial from that instead of...
Whatever happened to Sephiroth?
He doesn't show up in 3 as far as I know. Like, he's just a bonus boss. Like, him and Cloud are, like, dueling eternally sort of thing.
And he's not in any of the random other...
I don't know. I know he's a bonus boss in 1 and 2. I don't know if he shows up as bonus bosses in other games.
Do you ever have to fight, like, the weird Ultima Dragon things from, like, Final Fantasy?
Like Bahamut?
Yeah, that guy.
I don't think so. You fight Cerberus, you know, from Hercules.
Never have to fight the weird Cactus Men?
No. So, a lot of people are mistaken in their assumption that this is, like, Disney and Final Fantasy blended. Like, Final Fantasy has cameos. Most of the enemies and everything are original Kingdom Hearts characters. You don't... Sephiroth and Cloud, I think, are the only people you ever actually fight.
Okay. You have to fight Cloud?
Yeah, in the original game, like, he's being manipulated by Hades, because...
Nice.
You know.
Yeah. Good on Hades. Alright, that was really weird. Hades. Like, I feel like I have to, like, process all that, but it's like... Alright, readers. I think... Or readers. Listeners. Viewers. Gamers. People. We've just been through something, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the...
Kingdom Hearts saga. Did you ever get to go to Kingdom Hearts in any of these things?
No, we haven't been to Kingdom Hearts. We got close in Kingdom Hearts 1, but that's as close as we've ever gotten.
And then like 10 games that just lead you further and further away.
Yeah. So I think we've gone way over than we normally do.
We need to cut this shit.
Yeah, so we're going to stop here. I hope you enjoyed the fast retelling of Kingdom Hearts. I think probably an hour summary.
It was probably, I would say an hour.
Yeah. Like, there are YouTube videos out there that, like, cut it down to 40 minutes.
Okay. I mean, you can now go and play Kingdom Hearts 3 straight up,
probably. Yeah, like, if you've listened to all of this, you should know as much as I do as I'm playing Kingdom Hearts 3. Like, I was playing it with my girlfriend, and she was laughing because she...
You're trying to explain this to her?
Well, yeah, part that, and part like she was listening to all this anime bullshit going on.
Yeah.
And then she would laugh because suddenly Mickey's voice or Donald or something would show up. And so it was like all this weird anime shit. And then you hear, you know, Donald quack or Mickey's high pitched voice like, oh, I can't even do it. I'm like out of practice. Like my throat hurts from like doing all this talking.
I'm still like, who the frick thought this up? This is such a weird, even for Disney, for Final Fantasy, for Japanese J anime.
The important question is, Harvey Z, how would you put an X in your name?
Ooh.
Where would your nobody be?
Because I need that Z, because I can't go with Harvey X. Yeah. Would that be? No, you need that Z.
The Z is part of your name.
Harvey Zix. No.
No, it's got to be moved around a bit. It would be like Yexrov Z.
Nope. Or, it's got to be.
Or Yez. How about.
But wait, the X one is my nobody?
Yezrov X.
See, the X can't be obvious. The whole point is a silent X, so they don't know I'm evil. So that's my X has to be the least conspicuous X. All right,
that's going to be your homework for next podcast.
Zarvi H.
You're gonna come in Zarvi H.
Zarvi H. And then secretly it's ZX. But you didn't know that, motherfucker.
No, the X has to be like in there, either pronounceable or is like part of the name.
That nobody needs to know that.
Because like all the it's like Marluxia. You may not pronounce it differently, but the X is still there. Like it has
or
to be.
How about this? The X versions are nobodies. Harvey Z is a motherfucking somebody. So fuck you. Have a nice day.
Where can they find you, Harvey Z?
At the Z is silent.
Just like the X.
On Twitter.
You can find me at T-Man Plays Games on Twitter. You can find our podcast at Make Me a Podcast on Twitter. You can find my writings at tmanwrites.com. And you can always contact us by email at makemeagamerpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And thank you for listening to my long-winded explanation of Kingdom Hearts. Next week, we'll get back to some regular news, regular chats about games and shit like that. This was an experience for me as much as it was for you.
Peace.